You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
You're on riverboat gambling trips.
You're gonna die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner, Monday, July 18th, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DMs are always open for you. And subscribe so you get this bad boy once it goes live. We will talk to Sean Green from the Sports Gambling Podcast. He is jacked up for football, and so am I. But I can take some blame for that because I start to get him going. We're talking about bets we love, bets we don't, teams we like, teams we don't. Getting ready for the 2022 NFL regular season and beyond. So we'll talk to Sean coming up later on in the show. The bartender. I talked about this briefly at the end of the last episode because I was thinking, you know, about 2 months from now, our guy's going to be back, and he's going to be firing bets. If you're new to the show, by the way, the bartender is awesome at picking the wrong NFL sides. So I texted him to gauge the pulse. Where are we in the middle of July? We get to talking. Naturally, he brings up the teams he likes. Can I get a drum roll, please? It's still early, but he likes Tampa Bay to win the Super Bowl. Uh-oh. The bartender also thinks the Bengals and Eagles are going to make deep runs. All you Joe Burrow and Jalen Hurts fans just clenched up a bit, didn't you? So Tampa to win it all, Bengals and Eagles to make deep runs. Of course, the Bengals go to the Super Bowl. That's obvious for the bartender. I should have known. And the Eagles won the offseason. Going into that draft, before trading for A.J. Brown, drafting Jordan Davis, Eagles were 8.5. Now you're looking at 9.5 on the win total. That's the team that won the offseason. I have my concerns. In fact, we'll talk with Sean about a team that I like in the NFC East. It's not the Eagles. So that's the Holy Trinity, at least for now, for the bartender. Tampa Bay, Cincinnati, Philadelphia. 2 months. Cannot wait. DraftKings has been very aggressive posting a lot of NFL offseason markets. Give them full credit. Here's a market that's fascinating. It's playoff parlays. That's right. DK is letting you take two teams to make the playoffs. Actually, they let you take more, but most of them are two teams. Team A, Team B, here's a price. Some of them are three, some are four. They let you parlay four of the biggest favorites to make the playoffs at like minus 115. I'm not going there. So you pull up the NFL section on DraftKings, team futures, playoff parlays. That's the name of the category. For example, Bills and Bucks make it, minus 250. Yeah, no shot. Bills and Packers, minus 250. Bills, Packers, and Bucks, minus 150. Chiefs and Bucks, minus 140. Boring. You're paying a tax on any team with an elite quarterback, and if you want to get two together, forget it. But if you go down the page a little bit, you can find some decent shots. Chiefs and Vikings, 2-1. Purple. Ravens and Vikings, plus 220. Bills and Giants, I'm really interested in this one. You know the Bills make it. I like the Giants to take a step forward this year. Bills Giants pays almost 3-1, plus 280. Chargers Giants, plus 425. And another one that I'm interested in, given the price, Raiders Saints, plus 550. As you know, you pay the tax on the favorites, which makes the odds on everybody else a little bit bigger. So teams like the Vikings, the Giants, the Saints, the Raiders, because of all the hype on all the other teams, the Packers, the Cowboys, the Eagles, Chiefs, Broncos, Chargers, these other teams have nicer odds and bigger payouts. So those are five that I circled. Chiefs, Vikings, Ravens Vikings, Bills Giants, which I put in bold, underlined, and in italics, plus 280. Chargers Giants for a long shot, 4.25. Raiders Saints, plus 550. Just take a peek. See what you like. The last one is hysterical. I scroll all the way down the list. Texans, Falcons, Jets all make the playoffs. 1,000-1. No thanks. If I've said it once, I've said it a million times on Chicken Dinner. The more candy in the candy store, the more likely you are to leave with candy. And that's what this is. Playoff parlays. You couldn't do this when I was a kid. You couldn't do this when I was in college. You couldn't do this last year. The creativity. I love to see the creativity. It helps build content, too. We're talking about this stuff on our shows at Nesson. Playoff parlays. You can do this at DraftKings. Also at this book. Now, a lot of books have this market. I just pulled up DK because, as I said, they've had the most things going on. Fewest NFL regular season wins. Here's the market at DK. Texans, plus 275. Falcons, 4-1. Seahawks, plus 750. Jets, 850. Jaguars, 11. Lions, 12. Bears, 12. Panthers, 12. Giants, 14. Steelers, 18. Washington Football Conglomerate, 25-1. I'll draw the line there because none of the teams below this are going to be the worst team. I don't think. I mean, if Mahomes or Allen or Rodgers get hurt, of course, those are possibilities, but the teams I gave you are the worst of the worst. Chicago is leaping off the page. Just given the odds, if you ask me, Sammy P, pick the worst team in football. Falcons. Seahawks. Texans are obvious. But given the price at 12-1, Chicago checks a lot of boxes. Young, erratic quarterback, bad footwork, inaccurate, throws a lot of picks, holds on to the ball way too long. Bad offensive line, mediocre weapons, rookie head coach, new defense, new players. It's not a good team, and that's not even the plan this year. The new GM, Ryan Poles, has told you they need to plant a new tree. That's why they traded Khalil Mack. That's why they got rid of Akeem Hicks. That's why Robert Quinn is likely traded. The best players on the Chicago Bears will be Roquan Smith, Justin Fields, who else? Darnell Mooney? I saw a tweet from Eric Eager, friend of the show. He runs R&D for Pro Football Focus. Got to follow him, at @PFF_Eric. Quote, the Bears have like six NFL players on their team right now. I agree. They're not trying to win, though. They know that Aaron Rodgers has a couple years left. Kirk Cousins has a couple years left. The Lions are building. The Bears need to go to the bottom. That's the plan. If you don't understand that, you're not paying attention. Eager continued in another tweet. Quote, I don't think the Bears roster is a bad thing either. They are very clearly drying out in 22 from the previous regime with eyes towards 2023. That's a perfectly fine approach given where Poles and company started. Yes. Now, are they going to be the worst team? The math says no. But at that rate, at 12-1, fuck am I interested at 12-1 on a Chicago team that could go 3-14, 4-13, and be the worst team in the league. 12-1 implies about an 8% chance of probability. So you understand making a bet at 12-1, it's probably not going to win. But there is a very real possibility that the Texans aren't this bad. Davis Mills was very serviceable last year, and Lovie's always got a defense. The Falcons are a joke. The Seahawks have Geno Smith, Drew Lock, and two starting tackles on the offensive side of the ball that are rookies. Bad. Jets, bad. The Jags will be better. And I think the Lions will be better, too. Bears. Ugh. So given the prices, Chicago 12-1, it does make sense to me. Home Run Derby. Are you ready? Lots of hype around two players, Pete Alonso, Kyle Schwarber. If you ask one of your buddies right now, we should do this. This should be a litmus test. text your buddy who bets and ask him or her who they like to win the Derby. Odds are good you either get Pete Alonso or Kyle Schwarber. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with either choice because Alonso is the two-time reigning champ and Schwarber is right near the top with Aaron Judge as far as regular season leaders go right now. But because those two candidates are so popular, their odds are super short at the window. You're seeing Alonso and Schwarber basically 3-1 almost everywhere. The betting tax is real on those two because that's the general public's favorite combo, which makes, as I said earlier, the odds higher and more enticing on other participants. And the Home Run Derby, I know Alonso's been great, but the Home Run Derby is the one event where it's volatile. We've seen long shots win. We've seen players that had 6, 7, 8-1 win. Much like the three-point contest, which, remember, Carl Anthony Towns won at 13-1, the Home Run Derby allows you to go deep down the board. And there's a player at double-digit odds that I really like. And I talked to a couple buddies in Vegas who agree. Julio Rodriguez, Mariners rookie phenom. There's no reason that he should be 11-1 and Alonso should be 3-1. Julio has a very winnable first-round matchup against Seager, and then it's likely it's Alonso against Rodriguez in round two. But if those two were to tee off, I just can't wrap my head around the gap in price. You can't tell me Alonso should be 3-1 and Rodriguez should be 11-12-1. I get it. It's his first rodeo, but have you seen some of the balls he's hit this year? Big, strong kid. I don't think endurance and stamina will be an issue for a rookie monster. He's live to pull the upset there. And because he's facing Alonso, his odds are bigger. It's also worth reminding you, no player has ever won three straight home run derbies. It's never happened. Griffey won three, but not consecutively. Rodriguez is a big dark horse here. And anybody standing in Alonso's way has value, relatively speaking. He's my favorite sleeper of the bunch. So I like Rodriguez. Schwarber is favored or co-favored, whatever. He's right there with Alonso. Those would be my two. Like if I was betting, I'd go 100 on Schwarber 3-1 and 100 on Rodriguez at 11-1. Fade Alonso. Roll the dice on Schwarber Rodriguez. That's me. You do you, that's me. Two more things before we get to Sean Green. I wrote a story for Fox, maybe you've seen it, about Arch Manning committing to Texas last month. Basically, I went out and found nine of my buddies in Vegas who book bets and asked what they thought. How does this change Texas? And I know it's a long way away because in the fall, Arch Manning will be a senior in high school. But getting to pick the brains of people who book bets, make lines, move markets, I think it's fascinating. Texas hit a grand slam home run with this commitment. My Fox teammate Joel Klatt said last month, quote, "Steve Sarkisian may have won the most coveted prize we've ever seen in recruiting. And not just because he chose Texas, because the Manning family chose Texas. Fully aware, this kid won't take a snap in burnt orange until at least September of 2023. But the recruiting domino effect will be fascinating to follow." And Sark is getting some fucking players on offense. Talented pieces, receivers, tight ends, backs to surround whichever quarterback is starting next year. You know, they are so deep at QB going into 23. Hudson Card, Quinn Ewers, Arch Manning. They have the number one quarterback this year and next year. Obviously, there's only room for one of them to play, so you'll see one, if not two, transfer. Arch Manning's going to start next year, I would think. But it opens up the door for everybody else in recruiting to look at Texas and go, you know what? I want to play with the next Peyton or the next Eli. And Mo Pearson from WinBet insinuating that Manning could be worth around a touchdown to the betting line one day if he emerges as a player that many think he can be. You know, recent Heisman winners, Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, all worth around a touchdown. And it's possible that one day Arch could be worth 7 points of the betting line. Huge, huge get. And now the books are all paying attention to recruiting. Following the reports, looking at the trail. Sark's getting players. Does it mean they're going to win a national title? No. But they'll be contenders again. Look at the prices now. Texas to win the title in the coming season. As low as 40-1, as high as 80-1. They're not winning the national championship. But as Rex Byers said, if Manning is anywhere near as good as advertised, Texas will be poised to compete from day one against the SEC heavyweights. That's where Texas will be likely for the majority of Arch Manning's career. So a good piece, really enjoyed it. It's on my Twitter. It's on foxsports.com. But my favorite part about writing this story is that I reminisced about being in high school betting on the 2005 Texas Longhorns. I believe I've told this story before, but it's worth repeating. That was when I first started gambling, like 15, 16 years old. And when you first start, you always win because that's how you get hooked. That was the year Texas went 13-0, beat USC in the national championship. They were 12-1 against the spread and 12-1 to the over. And one of the guys on the south side at Mount Carmel goes, Texas in the over, just parlay him. And he was right. That 2005 Texas schedule, I'm going to just read you the final scores here. Week one against Louisiana Lafayette, 60-3. Week two, this game went under, but they covered. They upset Ohio State in the horseshoe, 25-22. 51-10 against Rice, 51-20 at Missouri, 45-12 against Oklahoma, 42-17 against Colorado, 52-17 against Texas Tech, 47-28 at Oklahoma State, 62-0 at Baylor, 66-14 against Kansas, 40-29 at A&M, 70-3 against Colorado, and in the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, January 4th, 2006, Texas 41, USC 38. What a trip down memory lane that is. What a trip down memory lane that is. Oh, made so much money on Texas and the over that year. And everybody at Carmel was doing it. Like, we were all parlaying it, betting it straight with probably the same guy or two. Texas in the over. Texas in the over. Texas in the over. Be fun if we could find a team like that this year. I'll talk to the guys and gals, see what we could find. Presbyterian was a moneymaker last year until the books caught up. Remember, those early totals were 69, 70, 71, 72, and then the totals were just 80s. Didn't one of the totals land 90 or close 90, I mean, and that went under? The books usually catch up, but they didn't catch up to Texas that year. They did not. Last thing, a very, very bad error by William Hill. Have you seen this? Listener Kevin Bitter sent me this at Chicken X Dinner. Please send your notes, comments, questions, anything you find, send it there, at Chicken X Dinner. It's a screenshot of the passing yards leader market at William Hill in Nevada. And I'll just go down the page. Desmond Ridder, 200-1. Sam Howell, 200-1. Mason Rudolph, 200. Malik Willis, 200. Kenny Pickett, 200. Jordan Love, 200. Tyrod Taylor, 250-1. Dwayne Haskins, 250-1. How do you make this mistake? And what's even worse is that there are players that have higher odds than Dwayne Haskins. I'm not kidding. Ryan Fitzpatrick, 300-1. Blaine Gabbert, 300-1. Longer odds than Dwayne Haskins. Yikes. Joining us on Chicken Dinner, co-host of the Sports Gambling Podcast, he is Sean Green. Follow on Twitter at Sean T. Green, S-E-A-N. Welcome to the show, my friend. What's going on?
Dude, thanks for having me. Just dog days of summer here, literally counting down the days to the Hall of Fame game. And yeah, I will be betting on the Hall of Fame game.
Don't lie. You are counting down the days to Browns-Panthers week one. I've been looking at your Twitter for the last week, and you are just so excited for revenge Baker Mayfield. Are you not?
Well, I think that game obviously becomes way more interesting. And my co-host and I, we did like a way too early NFL win totals prediction podcast, and we just shared the clip from it. But we talked about this. We go, it's pretty obvious the league made this Panthers-Browns game week one with the idea that they think Baker's going to end up in Carolina. And now, again, I've talked a ton of crap on Baker Mayfield. I don't think he's a, you know, number one pick overall. I don't think was a great pick by the Browns. But on the other side of that coin, the Browns ran out of town a guy who won them a playoff game against the Steelers. To bring in Deshaun Watson, pay him, you know, guaranteed $250 million. It's going to be interesting, but I do think you're going to see the best version of Baker because he has a chip on his shoulder. Matt Rhule maybe can figure out how to talk to him a little bit here. And, you know, if you give him a running game, DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, although Robbie Anderson already out, according to his Instagram comments on Baker, I think it could go super sideways for sure. But I think you're going to see, at the very least, a better Baker Mayfield than we saw the last year in Cleveland.
So we had a guest on a couple weeks ago, Will Hill, who works for the New York City cast. He does work with VSiN, and he's standing here going, all right, you got to do this. You got to take Carolina plus the four. And this is before, obviously, any maneuvering by the Carolina front office. He just thought that Deshaun Watson wasn't going to play. So I'm like, he might be onto something here. So I grabbed a little Carolina plus four about 2 weeks ago, and now I'm sitting here looking at the board, and Cleveland's minus one, minus one, minus one. There's a pick at WinBet. And my sick ass right now in early July is thinking about middling. I'm thinking about middling a game in week one 2 months out.
Is Baker a 3-point upgrade over Darnold? You have to look at that. And I was totally with him. We did a similar pod, you know, early look at the week one NFL lines, and there's no world where Jacoby Brissett should be a 4-point road favorite. So yeah, again, and obviously ahead of the news here, it's crazy that it's down to one, but I wouldn't be surprised if it closed as far as Carolina minus three, because I think everyone, once the, you know, general public is, you know, gets up to the line there and sees, oh, Baker in a revenge game at home, and he has Christian McCaffrey, and he's going up against the Browns with Jacoby Brissett on the road. Who's taking the Browns there?
It makes me a little nervous for your Eagles, because if I line up like 20 strangers in the street and say, hey, over under the win total, I think 21 of the 20 are on the Philadelphia over. Does that make you nervous?
Yeah, because, you know, the Eagles do well when we have no expectations, when no one believes in us, when Carson Wentz goes down with an ACL injury and Nick Foles comes in and everyone writes off the season. The Eagles do better with no expectations. I'm totally worried that everyone is calling the Eagles their sleeper team, the team to watch. You know, again, we did an early NFL win totals, and this was pre-AJ Brown trade, pre-draft. I really like the Eagles over 8.5. Again, take it with a grain of salt. I'm insanely biased. But, you know, now it's up to 9.5 off of, you know, just bringing in a receiver in their draft. I mean, I'm stoked about AJ Brown and what they did in the draft, but I don't know if it warrants a whole 1-point move on an NFL win total. So I am super scared, Sam, that, you know, the public and just we don't need hype. You know, there Miles Sanders almost dropped the DT word, AKA dream team. He said they're an all-star team and everyone got so bad. Like, don't do that. You know what happened in 2011 when who was it? It was Vince Young coined them a dream team. Hilarious for so many reasons, but yeah, certainly worried about the public hype surrounding this Eagles team. Would rather be in the sleeper spot for sure.
That division, honestly, Sean, I wouldn't be surprised if any of the four teams won it. Dallas dominated down the stretch last year. They got really hot. They started dropping 30, 40, 50 points on everybody. But that offense is going to look a lot different. And Mike McCarthy, the longer he's in a job, the more he tends to fuck it up. So I'm not high on Dallas. I'm certainly not high on the Washington Commanders with Carson Wentz. I've got this weird feeling that the Giants are going to be better than people think because they have the weakest schedule in the NFL. And I do like Brian Daboll a whole lot, even though there are many of Daniel Jones' doubters. But I look at this division, 1, 2, 3, 4. I could close my eyes and play pin the tail on the donkey and probably find the division winner if I wanted to.
Yeah, it's and of course there's that nugget going back to I think it was 2003, 2004. That was the last time a team in the NFC East repeated as division champs.
Wow.
I'm with you on the Commanders. Again, it's just hard to think it's going to work out with Carson Wentz going to a worse offensive line there in Washington. Yeah, and on paper, this would be if you're a Giants fan, you're talking yourself into this is going to be our year. We got rid of all the horrible coaches we had. Brian Daboll is going to be able to fix whatever's going on with Daniel Jones. Saquon's healthy. I see the case, but again, you know, the Giants win loss record, I think worst team in the NFL in the past 10 years. So they've figured out ways to lose games in this past decade. I still don't think Daniel Jones is the guy. For me, as an Eagles fan, honestly, what I'm worried about is they bring in Tyrod Taylor, you know, 6 games into the season, and he can play a relatively clean game, not turn it over, not have the fumbling issues that Daniel Jones has. And Dable's able to scheme up something that's pretty effective on defense or on offense. And, you know, they do enough there defensively to keep them in games. I think if Tyrod Taylor starts 11 games, I think there's a chance they could have a winning record. If they're going to try and, you know, just get every drop of what is left in the Daniel Jones experiment and run him, attempt to run him all 17 games, I don't see how they're going to have more than 8 wins. But I think Tyrod, you know, Tyrod's professional quarterback. You put him in like the perfect situation, perfect scheme. He's a guy who's going to limit his own turnovers. I think that could be interesting.
I'm going over the win total. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, a lot of things have to go right. Let's not get it twisted. But if you throw in an improved Daniel Jones or a Tyrod Taylor with the weapons that they have, Galladay, Tony, Shepard, if Saquon can stay on the field, they've drafted a tackle in 2 of the last 3 years. Andrew Thomas on one side, Evan Neal on the right side. If everything goes to plan, look, they can make the playoffs at 3-1. Am I insane for thinking that?
3-1, sure. I mean, again, the Eagles got there last year at 9-8. So I could the Giants get to 9-8 and get that 7th spot in the playoffs? Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a path to that. And I think you laid it out. To me, for that to happen, they have to get to Tyrod sooner rather than later, because I don't know. I've watched it essentially every Daniel Jones start. I just don't see it. Tyrod, you know, the ceiling isn't super high, but the floor is pretty low, and he doesn't have like the rushing upside of a Jalen Hurts. But I think, again, he can play a relatively clean game and keep him in it.
What's your favorite way to bet the NFL on Sundays, week to week?
Oh, man. I mean, I just love just a good money line dog. You know, you can pull all those trends of underdogs. They win outright, whatever percentage, and you're better off usually just taking them on the money line. So a good money line dog or, you know, doing round robin, like picking 3 NFL dogs I like to win outright, putting them in a round robin and just watching it sweat out, you know, watching the sweat there, because those are fun. I mean, you get a couple dogs right that you parlay during an NFL week, that'll carry you. You know, you can grind it out and just pick each team against the spread, but all you need is a couple nice money line dogs. And maybe I'm just looking back on one of the best wins I had last year was taking the Jags on the money line against the Colts.
Yes.
7-1 that final week 18. Just knowing that it wasn't going to happen for Carson Wentz. And the Jags, they always get one against the Colts, regardless you know, everyone hypes up Frank Reich as this great coach, but he has not, I don't think, in his tenure, swept the Jags yet. The Jags, regardless of what's going on, figure out how to get one win against the Colts each season. So I love that spot and just spots like that in general. And I had that that Jags money line parlayed with the Texans money line, and they almost beat the Titans. It was, I think they ended up losing by, they were up at some point. You look at the score, it doesn't reflect how close of a game it was, but I think I had like 100 to win, like, you know, something crazy on that as a parlay. So again, really just love parlay and money line dogs or just any sort of dogs in the NFL. And that's what's great about the NFL. It truly is the most week to week sport of all time.
Indianapolis week number one with your guy, Frank Reich. They're on the highway at Houston. And this is just a free space, right? This is going to be in every money line parlay that everybody places in Las Vegas and around this country. I'm looking at the ceiling right now. Indianapolis minus 395. Houston comes back about plus 3.25.
Yeah, I mean, I'm leaning towards maybe taking Houston as a live dog there. The Colts in general have struggled at times. Week one under Frank Reich, I think it was 2 years ago. It was the Philip Rivers year. I think they lost. It may have been in Jacksonville again in week one. I just know the Colts have killed a number of survivor leagues over the years because they start out on the road against some team in the AFC South they should definitely beat, and it comes crumbling down. So I haven't gotten down on this yet, but I could definitely see myself taking the Texans on the money line and maybe with the points there. But yeah, I think the Texans are I'm on their over for their win total of 4.5. I don't think they're quite as bad as everyone thinks. You know, I test Davis Mills, I think is, I mean, you could make a case, you'd be crazy to make it, but you could make a case he was one of the better quarterbacks last year as far as like rookies. What we saw out of him, I test touchdown interception ratio. So I think they're going to be, I don't think they're going to get destroyed at home week one, and hopefully Stingley's a go and Lovie Smith can get the most out of them. But I wouldn't be surprised if they put up a decent fight there week one.
Thank you for the trip down memory lane. This is the first time I ever entered the Circa Survivor. I had an inkling. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it. It was a Friday night. I'm sitting at the bar. I'm not even kidding. I'm sitting at a bar on a Friday night and I go, fuck it. I'm going to fly to Vegas tomorrow and I'm going to plunk down the money for the Survivor. So I fly in on a Saturday at 10 in the morning, get off the plane, get in a car, go to Circa, drop the cash on the counter, get my Survivor paperwork, and put in my pick for week number one, Indianapolis Survivor. I fly back to Chicago Sunday morning only to land, and they are already losing to Jacksonville, and they go on to lose the game.
So it was Jacksonville. Yeah, that's what I thought without looking it up. Oh, man. So, again, this I would highly recommend not taking the Colts in week one on the road. And I don't think it applies as much to Houston, a little more climate controlled. But, again, in Florida in September, especially with these, like, light training camps that a lot of these teams have been running – The Florida teams has home dogs where it's going to be super hot and humid down there. It is ends up being a nice advantage for them.
I have like two more questions, and I saw you guys talking about this on one of your podcasts at the end of June. The first head coach fired. This is always of my favorite conversations to have, and for years I was betting on Matt Nagy. Unfortunately, didn't come to fruition because the Bears just loved him so much and his stupid play card and his BU bullshit. So I never cashed on Matt Nagy, but who is the front runner in Sean Green's first coach fired pool?
You know, it was, it's interesting because, you know, like there was some, I don't know if you recall last year, but there was a lot of controversy because John Gruden technically resigned. So now the wording of the first coach fired is, first coach fired or resigned. because of really because of that. And, you know, so there's some interesting long shots. Matt Rhule is the favorite at plus 300, then Mike McCarthy, Pete Carroll. Frank Reich was one of the ones that I was on at 7-1. I think you have a kind of impulsive owner in Jim Mersey, to say the least. I know he was super upset at the Carson Wentz situation, and Frank Reich really went out on a limb, staked his reputation on saying, "Hey, Carson Wentz is my guy. We can get this figured out." You know, hey. Basically backed his reputation on Carson Wentz. So if things go bad early with Matt Ryan, I could see Ursay wanting to look, you know, to look to pull the plug sooner rather than later. Frank Reich 7-1. That's a pretty fun one. The other one that I threw in there out in Arizona, Cliff Kingsbury right now, you can get 12-1. Mm. The case for this is pretty simple. I mean, there's all that noise, distraction, drama with the whole Kyler Murray and his contract situation. So imagine this happens where by all accounts, they're going to get the deal done. So Kyler signs this massive deal and then it unravels. All of a sudden he maybe doesn't like the play calling, calls out the coach. They get off to a rough start, and then Arizona's backed into a corner where, hey, we just gave Kyler all this guaranteed money. We can't trade him. We need a quarterback, and Kingsbury ends up being kind of the fall guy there. And certainly things ended poorly last year. They did get in the playoffs, but again, looked pretty rough there against the Rams. So 12-1, he's kind of an interesting case there as well.
Well, and the way that they usually start, that's a bold move because you get a bigger price because the narrative on Cliff is always the same.
Yeah.
Start out hot, fade late. But if they do start 1-3, 2-5, that number is going to plummet. And 12-1, I feel like 12-1 is a little juicier than maybe it should be.
Yeah, and again, to your point, they always do start out hot. But again, what if the you know, Kyler wasn't at OTAs, DeAndre Hopkins expected to miss the first six games, even though, as he said, he was innocent. He didn't appeal a suspension. So if you look at the splits with and without, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, it's pretty jarring for Kyler's numbers. So, and I don't think Hollywood Brown's just going to be this plug and play guy that you're going to put in there and you're going to get the same DeAndre Hopkins output. So maybe they start out 2-4 or to your point, like 1-5, 1-6. It could get ugly early here.
Yes.
You're in a, with the exception of the Seahawks right now, you're in a pretty competitive division. So I think it could be rough early for them. And you compare them to like guys in that similar range, you know, like Mike Vrabel at 12-1. I don't think he's going anywhere. John Harbaugh, 16-1. I would be shocked if he ended up. And some of these guys like Harbaugh, and I even think Vrabel to some degree, they have enough cachet with the organization that if they were going to let them go, they would at least do it, you know, after the season ended. Like they would give them the courtesy, like let them ride it out. I mean, they have Mike Tomlin at 18-1, which is insane. I mean, Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season. So you think he would get 1 year as a pass. There. So pricing wise, yeah, it was definitely an interesting market. And normally I would not want to touch any of the first year head coaches because usually they're given that first year. Urban Meyer kind of broke the model last year by getting fired. I think he was 50-1 first coach fired. Now, again, it got a lot of the people had to fight it out. And you know, as far as like what book paid out what because of the John Gruden technically resigned before he got fired. So if you're getting down on this, obviously make sure to check the exact wording and rules on that.
Last thing, favorite future bet is what?
Favorite future bet. Mm. There's a lot I like in the future market because we've been breaking down a ton. I'll give you. Yeah, we talked about Mike Tomlin. Let's just talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right now, you can get the over on the Steelers at 7. I think minus 125 over on DK. Love the over there. Again, he's never had a losing season. And I think And we still haven't got the announcement on the Deshaun Watson suspension. You can still get the Steelers like 9-1, some places maybe even as high as 10-1 to win the AFC North. I love all the like positive Steeler bets, whether it's them to win the division, them to make the playoffs, over at 7. Love that. Even Tomlin now at 30-1 for coach of the year. The formula for this team to succeed is pretty simple. One, they're just an institution. Two, Mitch Trubisky and, Kenny Pickett, the combination of those could very well be a slight upgrade over what we saw to Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, he was all the way down there like 6.2 yards per attempt, just not helping the offense at all. If, you know, Kenny and Mitch, again, I'm sure you're completely out on Mitch Trubisky as a starting quarterback, but I think in an ideal situation with a good running game and then Kenny Pickett, who the Steelers just can't miss when it comes to drafting receivers. And then on the other side, you got TJ Watt, who's neck and neck for defensive player of the year, create some turnovers. And my favorite nugget is they have the shortest travel schedule in the NFL by a wide margin. They don't leave the Eastern time zone. So you have a good head coach. You have a quarterback situation that can exceed expectations just by being better than last year. And then you have a solid defense with a guy like TJ Watt that can really change the game. So of all those futures, again, over 7, I feel like is a lock at this point. And then I really like them to win the division at 10-1, because I think they're just going to be competitive in a lot of these division games. The Browns pricing is still like they still haven't figured it out. Is Watson playing? Is he not? How many games? And then, you know, the Bengals, maybe they regress slightly. So, I think the case for them to win the division, and certainly they're over 7, is pretty strong.
I love me a 10-1. That's a great way to end this bad boy. That's Sean Green, co-host of the Sports Gambling Podcast. Follow them at Gambling Podcast and follow Sean at Sean T. Green. I'll be pulling for my Giants. You'll be pulling for your Steelers. What could possibly go wrong? Thanks for joining us on the show.
All right. Thanks, Sam.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Sean Green for hopping on the show. Record check. Nothing has changed. We are playing Julio Rodriguez to win the Home Run Derby. You can find him at 11-1 if you shop around. I think he's live. Look, it's probably going to be Alonso or Schwarber, but I like Rodriguez, and I'm going to fire at 11-1 because that's what I like to do. Find the right player at the right price and dive into the pool. Chicken Dinner is on vacation the rest of the week. We will be back next Wednesday with Greg Hoops Peterson, who does a lot of work over at VSiN, a college basketball savant, and we used to work together. He used to produce the Green Zone on weekends, Saturdays and Sundays on the Vegas Stats and Information Network. So a long conversation with Hoops. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next time right here on Chicken Dinner. My brother told me so, you'd be the greatest man alive.